Call the answer line, where you're the head honcho, the big cheese, top dog, big man, mighty boss, and you can tell us exactly where to go.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service. Media Network, a weekly review of what's happening in the international communications business, hosted by Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, we're back as predicted with another 30 minutes of what's happening between DC and daylight.
And coming up this week, a profile of radio in Burundi, both from the archives thanks to the Richard Jinby collection and to Francis Rolt, who's in Bujumbura right now.
But we start with this.
The important bit, your letters, of course, and a selection from the postbag. Dragan Stankovic is a listener in Belgrade with these comments.
I'm one of those who are 100% convinced that there is no future with the present regime. The only way forward for our country, so as to have a chance to start off with a clean slate, is a change in leadership. The West will thus have the duty of supporting both financially and politically a valid alternative to Milosevic. It does seem strange, after years of labeling CNN as a factory of lies, the Serbian authorities have radically changed their stance towards this TV station. CNN has completed its own peace talks with the Yugoslav authorities, winning agreements to double the number of people covering the news in Serbia and bring in new satellite equipment to transmit stories back to Atlanta. CNN is also negotiating to have some of its programming broadcast this summer inside Yugoslavia with Serbian translations. CNN says that more than $1.1 million worth of their equipment has been confiscated or destroyed.
Well, CNN International's network is already seen inside Yugoslavia, but its programs are in English and available only to the 5% of the population with access to satellite dishes. That terrestrial solution sounds rather interesting. I wonder what the Voice of America thinks about it. On Tuesday evening of this week, Karl Honsik in the Czech Republic reports hearing the NATO station called Allied Voice, which actually comes from an airborne transmitter on board a US EC-130 aircraft flying over the Balkan region. He noted it on a new frequency of 1270 kHz just before 22 hours UTC when it signed off. The use of 1270 instead of a standard European channel of 1269 kHz is a deliberate military tactic. A station in Novi Sad is normally on 1269, and assuming that station is on the air and you tune to that channel, you'll hear a whistle. And the theory is that you'll tune slightly further up the dial to find out what that other station is saying. That, of course, is Allied Voice. Well, that's the theory, anyway. I'm curious to see if anyone will do a proper analysis of the credibility of Western media in Serbia once this conflict is over. And on the subject of AM, a new Dutch medium wave station started some official broadcasts yesterday afternoon on low power. We had several phone calls after a test transmission was noted around 15 hours UTC on 1332 kHz, 1332, but no name was audible. Now let's see what's been coming in by other means.
Call and talk. Radio Netherlands answer line is open 24 hours a day for comments and questions about any of our English language programs. Now, let's check out the current crop of calls.
Jonathan, Deanna, this is from Media Network. This is Norman Hill in Washington, D.C. Do the broadcasters and the amateur radio community plan to do something with the long wave broadcast band? In the United States, from 160 to 190 kilohertz, which will roughly take up 162 to 189 kilohertz on the long wave band, looks like that's going to be used for amateur radio, 200 watts at an antenna height of 200 feet. What's the situation over in Europe? Are broadcasters going to lose that to the hams over there too?
Norman, the answer is no. Longwave broadcasting is actively used in Europe and North Africa, and there are big investments being made at the moment, such as a new station in the Isle of Man and one up in Norway. Longwave can also be digitised using the DRM standard, so there's a lot of life left in it yet for broadcasting purposes. Now, as well as phone calls to 3135-6724-222, we also accept real audio files under 5 megabytes, sent to the email address media@rnw.nl. That's media@rnw.nl. Like this one from Tom Sundstrom in New Jersey, who's also a regular contributor to our Real Radio e-zine.
Jonathan, I was intrigued by Bob Tomansky's argument in the June 3 Media Network that Sky Digital and non-digital was at fault, as it were, for giving away its set-top boxes, whereas early adopters of the technology paid for those units. I can actually make the same argument for purchasing a new computer. I could buy a Pentium 3 at its adoption and pay probably £400 to £500 more than if I waited 6 months. That's the penalty for being on the bleeding edge, and businesses have to grow their businesses in whatever way is possible.
Thanks for the call, Tom, and you're right, early adoption has its price. Peter Konarski's daily satellite newsletter keeps a watchful eye on the skies, and whilst a huge build-up is going on in this part of Europe because of the solar eclipse on August the 11th, others are pointing to an object in space which is much closer to home. Russian space experts in charge of the aging space station Mir say there was never any funding for a controlled descent of the spacecraft, and the 130-ton station may crash anywhere on Earth. A large object such as Mir should break into pieces as it re-enters the atmosphere, but there's no guarantee that all the little bits will burn up completely. So far, lost satellites and even space stations such as Skylab and Salyut 7 have caused no severe damage on the ground, either splashing into the ocean or hitting deserted areas. But expect to hear more about Mir when it's time to bring it back.
This is AM Radio, where active minds get involved and interact.
Time to look in the books. It's not often these days you get something for nothing with no strings attached, so this next item makes a pleasant change. For some time now, Belgian shortwave listener Herman Boel has operated a website full of useful and up-to-date information for the international radio listener. Herman's also a big medium wave enthusiast, and last year he started producing a list of medium wave stations in Europe, North Africa and the Middle East. We reviewed it here on Media Network and gave it high marks for accuracy.
Well, now Herman has taken the next logical step and put the medium wave list on his website. But what's refreshing is that he isn't charging for downloads. Anyone interested can have the publication free of charge. The latest update was published on May 13th, and it's in Adobe Portable Document format. So you will need a PDF reader, but that's free too. The download is a zipped file of 220K. The PDF file inside is only 270K, so this extra step hardly seems worth the bother. When you've unzipped it, you get a 42-page document in A4 format, which you can print out if you wish. The electronic version, of course, is searchable.
Bags of stuff to look into. If you missed our previous review, here's a quick summary. The first section is a listing of all stations in frequency order, with columns for frequency, country abbreviation, using the standard ITU country codes, station name, location, power, and hours of operation. It's also information about the language and programming information. We do have one minor criticism, though. The times given in the list are in Central European local time, whereas we prefer the use of UTC in all lists to avoid confusion, especially when the clocks change.
The second part of the list is the address section, which is arranged by country and includes checklists of the frequencies used by each station, so it's easy to cross-reference between the two parts of the list. The list is maintained with the help of a number of well-known active medium-wave listeners in different parts of Europe, including Media Network contributor Steve Witt. This means that details reflect what's actually heard, which doesn't always agree with official information. At the end of the publication, there's a list of stations that have disappeared since the previous edition.
If you don't have a computer with an internet connection, or you simply prefer a traditional printed document, that's also possible. The medium wave list is available by mail, but for obvious reasons you have to pay for this service. The cost is 300 francs within Belgium, 15 Deutschmarks or 10 US dollars elsewhere in the European Union. If you're outside Europe and you're interested, we suggest you contact Herman Boel for the rates that apply to you. His address will be read by Diana, because she can say it better.
His address is Herman Boel, Rockleif 10, and Rockleif spelled R-O-K-L-Y-F, number 10, postal code B9300 in Alst, A-L-S-T, in Belgium.
See what I mean? Now, the website from which you can download the medium wave list is at com.to/dxing. Unusual address, com.to/dxing. No www at the beginning of that.
I was very glad this is on a school, because I have also got the same feeling, the feeling of being neighbors in a small village who are doing the programs for DXs. And I think this is what has developed during the last 25 years, the feeling of neighborness between all people dealing with shortwave broadcasts.
The voice of Arne Skoog, who passed away on Monday, June the 7th, at the age of 86. He was the founder of Sweden Calling DXs, one of the first programmes for shortwave listeners that helped people through the maze of frequencies and find new stations to listen to. He was also a key figure in the founding of the Swedish DX Federation and the European DX Council. That music you just heard also involved Arne, for as well as having a fascination for international broadcasting, he was also an accomplished violinist as well as a violin maker, and did a lot to revive Swedish traditional folk music. The June 15th edition of Media Scan, the successor to Sweden Calling DXs on Radio Sweden, will carry a tribute to Arne Skoog. Meanwhile in London, Tony Johns, the founder of Radio Invicta, London's first regular FM pirate station back in 1969, has passed away, aged just 51. He was buried yesterday. Many of the presenters now on UK commercial and public radio got their start on this innovative station, which used an ingenious network of illegal FM transmitters on the top of blocks of flats. Often they were bricked into the lift shafts to make it difficult for the PTT to disable the broadcast. Lookouts with CB radios kept an eye on the transmitter site and were able to bring alternative Invicta transmitter sites on the air elsewhere in London if there was a raid. This was all before the days of commercial and community radio in the British capital. But Tony Johns will be remembered for the different style of music he brought to London airwaves in the 1970s.
Now we turn to the African continent.
Indeed, and in the second instalment of our series on African radio, we're mixing unique archive material with brand new stuff from the region. Following Angola, we focus now on Burundi.
African Media Flashback. Archive recordings from the Richard Gibney Collection, plus updates from our production bureau in Benin.
Burundi has much in common with its northern neighbor Rwanda. Joint administration by Belgium until 1962, plus similar geographical features. The Republic of Burundi is flanked by Tanzania in the east, Zaire in the northwest, and Lake Tanganyika along the length of the western border. In 1966, the ruling monarchy was deposed and replaced by a one-party state. The capital, Usambura, a port town on the shores of Lake Tanganyika, was renamed Bujumbura. Radio Burundi succeeded Radio Usambura, the principal station run by the Belgian authorities. The name was changed to its present form, La Voix de la Révolution, in 1966. The first transmitter was of 10 kilowatts, joined by a sender of 25 kilowatts in 1971, and a 1 kilowatt medium wave transmitter was installed in 1965. La Voix de la Révolution broadcasts in Kirundi, Swahili, French, and from time to time also in English, on medium wave, short wave, and FM. At present, there are two networks on FM. One is in Kirundi, the national language, the other in French and Swahili. Burundi is also to add its voice to the international airwaves. A 100 kilowatt shortwave transmitter was installed at Gitega in the central region of the country, not far from the source of the Nile, earlier in 1983. A missionary station, Radio Kodak, opened in Bujumbura in 1964, broadcasting educational and religious programs in Kirundi, Swahili, French, and English. Initially, the power used on both shortwave and medium wave was only 250 watts, later raised to 2.5 kilowatts on shortwave. An FM transmitter also covered the capital area. In 1977, the government closed down Radio Kodak's operations. As their transmitters have not been taken into service by the national station, there is speculation in various circles that they were removed from Burundi.
The voice of the late Richard Jinbe. And since that collage was made, it's become apparent that the international station he mentioned is just a dream. A horrific campaign of genocide broke out in the Great Lakes region in 1994 in both Rwanda and Burundi. Much of that was fueled by radio stations broadcasting hate messages. Radio is the most productive and cost-effective means for delivering information in the Great Lakes region, where an estimated 85% of the population has access to radios. An organisation called Search for Common Ground established Burundi's first independent radio studio, Studio Jambo, in May of 1995, at the time when hate radio was promoting fear and mistrust. It's also fuelled the massacre of hundreds of thousands in neighbouring Rwanda. Studio Jambo, which means wise words in Kurundi, employs both Hutu and Tutsi staff. And Francis Rolt, a familiar voice to listeners of Radio Netherlands Newsline programme, has just been appointed the new studio manager in Bujumbura. Before we came on the air, Diana managed to link up with him, but since the phone lines in that part of the world don't do justice to the message, we've revoiced his answers.
Francis, you've trained in Africa before. What's so special about this project?
Well, the project's special because it has an aim beyond simply making radio programmes. Most radio stations have a very generalised aim: to inform, to educate, to entertain, to ensure the dissemination of knowledge. That's fine, but it's all much too vague in a situation like this, where there's a low-level war going on. Studio Ijambo exists to try and build contacts and dialogue between the two communities here in Burundi, not just to produce radio programmes. For instance, we make current affairs programmes, but we have to think twice if the subject's dangerous or controversial, and that usually is the case when there's a story about a massacre, or, say, splits in a political party. We make the effort to make interviews conducted by a team of two journalists, one from each of the warring community. That lessens the potential for criticism that we're biased. But of course there are lots of other ways to make programmes which meet our objective without having to be desperately serious. We make a youth programme in which young people from all over the region and from all communities get together to discuss the kind of things they have in common. The emphasis is on communality, like music or girlfriends and boyfriends. In that light, two producers have just returned from a trip to Rwanda.
Programme Express. Une production du studio Ijambo.
The genocides in Rwanda and Burundi are out of the headlines here in Europe, but not in Africa. But there have been important trials going on as these countries try to get back to some form of normality. What sort of stories dominate the media in Burundi and Rwanda 5 years later?
The single most important subject here is really the war in Congo. Because everybody's involved, whether they like it or not, and whether the country is militarily involved or not. For what's happening in Central Africa has the potential to spark off more great movements of people, of refugees, one way or the other, depending on who's winning, if you can talk about winning in such a war. And with refugees come the military and the paramilitary. This is the big international issue in the region, which is concerning everyone. But on a day-to-day basis here in Burundi, the big issue is inflation and prices. Since the embargo was lifted in December, the economic situation of the country and the people hasn't improved at all. In some ways, it's got worse, and that has a pretty big impact on security generally, on how safe people feel and how they view the future.
Still tuned to Radio Burundi calling from Bujumbura. It is 19 hours 45. Here's the news read by Frederica Vigirin.
How does Studio Ijambo play a role in the region?
Our programmes are currently broadcast on medium wave by the national broadcaster, the RTNB, which reaches as far as Kigali in Rwanda, into eastern Congo, and across the border into Tanzania, where the refugee camps are. But it seems unlikely that any of the people in the camps trust or listen to RTNB. We are planning broadcasts on Redi Umwizero, which has less of a reach, but probably a younger audience. And we've also been in touch with Radio Minurka in the Central African Republic, where there's a considerable Burundian diaspora. It will start taking some of our programmes as soon as we can figure out an effective way of getting them there, and with Radio Kwizera in the camps in Tanzania. Measuring how effective we are is pretty hard, but I think that simply by existing, by producing high-quality programmes, by being independent and showing that real journalism is possible, even if it's not always easy, I think that we do play a role which is far greater than the few hours of broadcasting we produce a week might suggest. And all the surveys we've done suggest that people have a high recognition of Studio Ijambo's programmes, and that some are listened to by nearly everyone, in particular the soap opera. Our youth programme is appreciated as far away as Kigali in Rwanda.
I seem to recall from a previous documentary that there was a radio station financed by the European Union in the same building. How's that doing? Any plans for medium wave or short wave?
Well, Umizero's medium wave transmitter is back on the air after a 6 month or so break. It can be heard pretty well throughout the country, as well as eastern Congo and north into Rwanda. However, although this operation is in the same building, in many respects it's a million miles from Studio Ijambo. It's financed from a completely different source.
So how does Studio Ijambo get funded? Is its mission to make itself redundant within a few years?
The studio's funded by an American conflict resolution non-governmental organisation called Search for Common Ground, which gets most of its money from USAID. I really don't think the studio can become redundant in a few years. The conflict is so complex and has so seared the souls of the people in the region that there's conflict resolution work to be done for years here. What I hope is that the studio can gradually become independent in the sense that it can raise its own funds by making commissioned spots or programmes or public service announcements for other organisations, while at the same time sticking to its primary aim, which is to help peace and reconciliation. But my personal mission is to make myself unnecessary within a couple of years.
Ici au Burundi, spécialement à Bujumbura, tout le monde se rappelle de Kamenge, cosmopolite, mais aussi une population civile innocente, très vite coincée entre le feu de l'armée gouvernementale et des maquisards. Et puis Kamenge s'est totalement vidé, la population et les rebelles sont partis, et aujourd'hui, Kamenge se repeuple tout.
Is there much contact between African countries in the Lakes region? Do you know what's happening in Uganda? Or is that sort of reporting left to Western news agencies who keep to the rule of reporting disasters in Africa, providing there are more than 500 dead?
Actually, thanks to the internet and to email, there's quite a lot of information which gets passed around the region from individuals and from organisations. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs sends out reports of political and military events in the region as they get the news about them. Then there's the Centre for Preventive Action in New York, which also compiles stacks of new hot items into dozens of packages, which are sent out by email every day to anyone who's interested. And then there are individuals who, sometimes under difficult circumstances, try to keep their friends and colleagues informed by email, partly because it's a way of reducing the isolation they must feel. So, in short, there is a lot of information buzzing around the region. If it doesn't get onto the international news in Europe and North America, it's not because no one knows what's going on.
What's it like to live there? I guess it's a bit more hot and humid than Hilversum.
Well, it's both of those, really, but Bujumbura is beautifully situated right at the north end of Lake Tanganyika, with the mountains of eastern Congo rising behind the lake. The city is pretty calm most of the time, And although there's a curfew at midnight, everyone still goes out dancing and drinking on Friday nights and at the weekends.
Studio Ijambo has become quite well known worldwide. How does that affect the studio?
It gives us a certain amount of freedom, which we might not have had if we weren't funded by powerful foreign organisations and didn't have a name. But it also brings difficulties. We just had one, actually. Someone produced a book on two of the studio's journalists based on the transcript of a film. The journalists didn't like the film and had demanded some changes be made, but the editor didn't make the changes. Now, someone else has jumped on the bandwagon and has written a book which contains the same things they didn't like about the film. They'd seen proof copies of the book and had asked for changes to be made. The book's now out, and the changes weren't made. The journalists here are very angry and feel used by people who talk about conflict resolution, but who are apparently quite happy to put the studio's journalists into a very difficult and possibly dangerous position by refusing to listen to them. The point is that there are people out there making money out of films and books about the studio. I suppose there's nothing wrong with that, but they should realise that the studio's journalists are not living in Europe. They can't go home to a safe bed at night, and they risk their lives on a daily basis. They risk them for a principle, because they believe in what they're doing, not because they want to be written about or filmed by other people who take no risks and who pretend to be on our side, when in fact they're on no one's side but their own.
The views of Francis Rolt in Bujumbura. David Hagen, who listens to us on the SAFM service in South Africa, dropped us a postcard inquiring about World Space. He's been asking in electronic shops in Cape Town, but so far no radios are for sale at any price, and the launch should have been about now. Well, due to the extensive field tests and some other coordination issues among all the partners, WorldSpace has apparently delayed its market launch of its proprietary satellite radio system. Around 10 sets are being used for test purposes at the moment, which are mostly in Africa. Mass production of the promised 500,000 radios has yet to start. We await further news.
This is the brain pattern of a person watching television. And this is the brain pattern of someone interacting with Radio Netherlands' website. With more than 3,000 pages of news and features with text, graphics, and audio, there are plenty of topics to interest you. That includes an online receiver test laboratory, a weekly e-zine on media developments, plus gossip about the people you hear on the air. So zip over soon to www.rnw.nl and check out the Theater of the Mind.
And that's it for this week.
And wherever you are in the world, from both of us,
have a pleasant weekend.
Right, that's your 30 minutes worth. Now it's your turn to react by phone, fax, postcard, or mail. Because this is your show, okay? Comprende? Good.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static, some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.